You used to just get up. Now it's a whole production. Let's change that. Get to Joint Relief Institute for fast, immediate pain relief. Covered by Medicare. Call 708-888-0000.
Welcome in, everyone, and happy Father's Day to all the fathers out there. I hope you're having a nice celebration, and we are going to be talking about fathers' rights and how fathers do in divorce and post-divorce coming up in the next hour, and we're going to also be talking to a legal travel expert about all the trips that you're going to be planning for the summer and how not to get caught holding the bag when it comes to traveling, cruising, and airplanes, and lost luggage, and all of those good issues. But now I want to start our show right away with a fascinating topic. It's been 32 years since serial killer John Wayne Gacy was executed. If you weren't around there or you don't know the story, he was convicted of killing 33 young men and boys and burying most of them under his home in Norwood Park. He was at the time the most prolific serial killer in history. There is a new published book out, and it's not about Gacy, but it's written by the killer himself. And with us to discuss this book are Ryan and Chloe Mannon, husband and wife couple who own and run the Grave Face Museum, which is a true crime, kind of dark history museum that has a lot of memorabilia from serial killers and cults and bizarre Americana. Also have museums in Savannah and Eureka Springs, Arkansas. Welcome to the show, Chloe and Ryan. Good to see you.
Good to see you.
Good to see you.
So let's just talk first, before we get to the book. First, what's the book's name? What is the name of the book?
The book is called A Question of Doubt.
Okay.
And it was written originally by Gacy when he was on death row, published in 93.
Okay. Yeah. And you have acquired the rights to it, and now you are publishing it.
That's correct, yeah.
And it really wasn't circulated. I mean, I know a lot about Gacy, and I never saw that book anywhere before you mentioned it to me.
Yeah, it was in super limited quantity, I believe.
500.
Yeah, 500 copies were produced originally, and it quickly fell into just a collector kind of territory. So it was a collector item.
Yeah, of course.
Because of the scarcity.
Yes. So before we get to that, I want to kind of get a background into the two of you. We have a very interesting business. You know, you're in the business of collecting, among other things. I mean, you've got music and all kinds of other things that you have going on. But this museum thing for the dark history and serial killers and cult figures. Ryan, tell us why you collect these kinds of things. And for those of our listeners out there who are kind of putting their arms across, you know, themselves and just kind of going, why is this guy collecting such weird things and why should we care?
I mean, for me, it started with what I call roadside America. So I came up in the era of like the 1960s attractions all disappearing, basically. So when I was a literal child, I was able to acquire like little mummies and shrunken heads and cool stuff that, you know, most people don't possess. And then that, I got into horror. And believe it or not, Pennywise, it led me to Gacy.
It's all Stephen King's fault.
I mean,
can we just say that?
Truthfully, I saw Fangoria when I was probably, I don't know, 10 years old, where he, it's just a quick quote in Fangoria where he states that Gacy was the inspiration for the character, and that was it. I started reading into the case and then was living in Norwood Park, and everyone I was meeting, it was so strange, had a story. Whether or not they were true or not, everyone had a story. I went to a party that he was clowning at, or, you know, my father was a potential abductee, or whatever the story is.
There, everyone has a story,
yeah.
To this day.
And it's fascinating.
It is. Or, you know, he was driving past my house, and he stopped and said something to me,
right.
And I think it was him. He was wearing a blue jacket, and, you know, there is...
Everyone.
Everyone has the story.
Like 100% of people. It's fascinating.
And it continues.
Correct.
And it continues. And
so that was the seed, I guess,
yes.
Is the point, to collect.
Now, just to kind of dispel some of the naysayers here, are we glamorizing John Gacy? Are we glamorizing serial killers? You've got Manson stuff. You've got Eileen Wardis items. You've got all kinds of things that are, you know, belong to or drawn by or dealing with people who did horrendous acts of violence. Are we putting them on a pedestal? Is that wrong?
So we're not putting them on a pedestal, certainly. It's... the museum and taking the museum approach is really a way for people to engage with these topics in a very personal way. And I think the fact that we're the only museum of this kind that has docents, so it is a very personal experience, and we like to make sure that these stories and the people who, you know, these awful people that did terrible things, we are talking about them in an accurate and non-salacious way, where it's just, you know,
there's a lot of misinformation. Yeah. Like a ton. Netflix and all these podcasts have kind of, I mean, there's plenty of like decent podcasts, I'm not saying there aren't, but they just use Wikipedia for the most part. So you have to kind of believe the specific police narrative of every case, and sometimes that's just not historically accurate.
Well, and I think the more sensational the story is, the more likely people are going to add to it.
Correct.
And then people now mimic it. And I have heard so many things about Gacy that I know personally are not
Correct.
True,
yeah.
But yet, you know, that those kinds of things continue.
Well, that's how I bonded with his sister.
Yes.
So I became friends with Gacy's sister, Karen. I would define her as my best friend for a period of time, which is bizarre to a lot of people. But that's what bonded her and I together, is she really appreciated that Chloe and I didn't exaggerate anything. We were searching for actual facts that we could prove, instead of, you know, books that are written about him torturing animals or like these things that she never saw, and she probably would have because they had animals or whatever small examples, you know, I can toss at you. But so that, you know, they might seem trivial, but when you're talking about history, it all adds up and it is important.
Well, and if you're trying to figure out from a psychological standpoint,
Correct.
What created these people
Right.
who do these kinds of things, I think that is definitely worth studying or at least examining. And one thing I want to mention before we go to a break, what is the name of your museum and where is it, just for people?
Yeah, we're called the Graveface Museum, and we have a location here in Chicago. It's in the Bucktown neighborhood on Milwaukee Avenue. And we have our main location is in Savannah, Georgia, and then we just opened a location in Eureka Springs, Arkansas.
And they're all kind of different, regional topics.
Got it. And just one final thing before we take a break is that, you know, question, what about the victims? And I hear that all the time. And you don't ignore the victims. In
No.
fact, you've got a whole board with the pictures of all the young men and boys who were victimized by Gacy standing, you know, I see you standing in front of that mm-hmm. board. What is it? Do you feel that you are giving the victims the attention that they're due?
I do, and we try to do that. And I believe that we are to the best that we can. I mean, they're oftentimes the victims are the most frequently forgotten part of true crime narratives, again, be it podcasts, books, movies, whatever, media. And our whole goal is to look at the whole case as a whole, as opposed to just picking the sensational thing. Like, we want to not forget about the people that were affected. And we talk about the victims a lot in the museum because there are still 5 unidentified victims.
Cool.
And
yeah.
That's the whole point of Ryan's research that he's been conducting over a decade, is really wanting to
There's also surviving victims, sidebar.
That too.
Yes,
you
right,
know,
no.
And those people mm-hmm. are super important.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Let's take a break. A Question of Doubt is a new book that you are publishing. The only way you can get it is to go to your website, which is?
Gravefacemuseum.com.
Graveface Museum. Yeah, gravefacemuseum.com. Let's take a break. We're here with Chloe and Ryan Mannon. We'll be back in a minute. Welcome back. We are talking to Ryan and Chloe Mannon. They have just published a book that was written by John Wayne Gacy called A Question of Doubt. Let's talk about this book. Now, it was circulated very, very in a limited fashion years ago, and you've gotten the rights to it, so you're now publishing it. Tell us what it is and what are people going to glean if they read it?
So it's a book that Gacy wrote himself about. It's the subtext is a commentary on the trial and arrest of John Wayne Gacy. So it is his version of reality pertaining to everything that happened after he was arrested and how he was treated in the medical facility that he was in, and then the trial. So you do a lot of the book is the trial transcripts, which there's not a lot of trial transcripts that are publicly available. It's not available in full. So you do get to see some of that, which is unique. And it's really his again, his additions to his own case from his own perspective.
Keep in mind, he thinks he's the 34th victim.
Right,
so
of course.
An idiot, you know?
Yes. But you know, but if you know anything about narcissism, you know that narcissists are victims. Mm-hmm. They are the victims of the
Correct.
Of the problems they create.
Oh,
and
yeah.
that is the thing they can do the best. They can turn it around so that instead of everyone looking at, you know, you as a perpetrator, you know, they try to make you feel sorry for them. Of course, with John Gacy's case, that would be really hard to do. I mean, I think it would be interesting to read this to get into his mind Correct. As to his denials probably of what he did and is not coming to grips
right.
with his evil side, right?
Yeah. Or with reality in general.
Right. You know, in the trial, there were two men living with Gacy during the course of the time that he was doing his crimes, or at least part of the time. And they testified that they dug the trenches in the crawl space. Do you believe that those two young men had something to do with procuring,
yes.
helping
yes.
Murder these
yes.
boys, and bearing...
Yes.
And you think they knew what was going
Not
on?
Not just them,
yeah.
but yes. I think there are multiple helpers.
And why do you think the prosecutors didn't prosecute them?
It would just be too complicated. I think at the end of the day, it was going to be way too messy. And they had every piece of evidence they would ever need just under Gacy's own house. Like, it would actually, I think, do damage in their opinion to really investigate anybody else and bring up any of these questions about other people or accomplices. So I think it was just an easier route.
And why do you think these young men associated with Gacy and did his bidding? I mean, were these kids evil too, or
no,
did they?
I think they were groomed.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which is depressing.
Okay.
You know, that's why the Gacy case is eternally fascinating to me. It's so complex, and there's so much deep psychology. Gacy was just good at convincing everyone. Anything he wanted, he could control. Including people and what they would do for him.
Well, and I think there were probably threats too. Mm-hmm. I mean, Gacy, from my dealings, you know, he was not above putting someone in
True.
A situation where they saw something and then said, and then saying to him, you know, you were here,
right.
you're mm-hmm. implicated, buddy.
Yep.
If I go down, you go down.
Yep.
So,
well, and he would also claim that he had mob ties.
Yeah. Right.
Like, he'll sick the mob on you and, like, you know.
Right.
And he was politically inclined, so.
And he was. I mean, you know, the picture with Rosalind Carter is Exhibit A, that he did, in fact, have some connections. Ryan, you alluded to the idea that there were other people involved in these crimes other than those two young men who were living with him. What do you mean by that?
I mean, I can count seven that at least were aware of what he was doing. Were they killing for him? No. And there's no way of proving... You know, so Gacy was out of town for some of the crimes.
Yes.
Right. I mean, that is fact. I have the records now. And actually, the first time you and I met was me trying to find the records.
Right.
Weirdly.
And they're definitive proof that
oh, yeah.
when some of these boys and men went missing, he was out
Correct.
Of town.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. 100%. And, you know, I pitched all that to Kunkel, who is now unfortunately deceased.
The prosecutor.
And Kunkel's reaction to me now having... all of Gacy's records and proving once and for all that Gacy was out of town for some of these. It doesn't make Gacy innocent.
No,
sidebar.
No.
I think Gacy's killing while he's out of state, right? So I actually think his body count
Me too.
Is way higher. I'm calculating it at like 100 to 105. So like big body count. So it's not me saying, oh, he's cleared. I'm glad he's dead and he was a terrible person. But Kunkel's response was, well, we just arbitrarily assign dates to some of these victims. So, but the wild thing is, if that's true, like Gacy was only executed for a certain amount of those murders.
Yeah,
right.
So if you're, you know, if you're prosecuting him and you're just making up dates, that seems wrong. I don't know. I mean
just legally, well, it matters.
Legally, it does matter. And I want to circle back to the idea that he was out of town in some places that were kind of rural.
Oh, yeah.
And you can't tell me that during a crime spree where he was killing like a machine,
right.
he was not up in like the Pacific Northwest or Wisconsin or somewhere where it was easier to abduct.
Correct.
Less populated, people didn't know him,
Correct.
Where he could dispose of bodies much quicker and much easier you know, in those areas.
I mean, I will say there's a lot of documentarians that claim the opposite, that he would never do anything like that out of his home. His home was his comfort, right? But I always just look at the river victims. He's driving 55 miles from his house to ditch those bodies.
Yeah.
In his vehicle and pulling off on the side of the road and tossing them into the river, that's an hour drive, which at least proves that he's okay with having bodies in his car.
Yeah.
You know, at the very least, that's proof.
If I had all the time in the world, I would go to those places where he was working. I would go through the microfiche or wherever right. all that information is about, did kids go missing? Because believe me, I've gotten calls from people
nice.
In different wow. places saying, my cousin went missing, my neighbor went missing. Do you know if Gacy was in that
right.
area at that time? And I was never able to give them a definitive answer, but someone could do that research.
Right.
It would be easy. It wouldn't be easy. I'm saying it would be interesting to
Correct.
See if there were some times that lined up.
And we've been working on a documentary that is that in a nutshell. Exactly what you just said is effectively what our documentary is. Going to all these places, trying to work with local police departments. Can you pull the missings from these dates in these two zip codes? Yada, yada, yada. And it's utterly fascinating, the results.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Really, really interesting. So I have a question. Do the people in this museum, Mary says, do they honor any of the police officers who were doing any of the investigation? Is that a part of what the museum is?
In Savannah, yes. Because Tovar specifically and I have become very close.
And he was the head investigator, or one of the
one of the diggers.
Yes.
One of the planes.
Yeah, I think he said he dug up five of the bodies, and obviously it impacted his life greatly.
Yes.
But yeah, he's donated his sort of personal collection and stories to the museum, and we have a whole section of his. I mean, he's still alive, mm-hmm. but sort of to honor what he did. I haven't, unfortunately, become close to any other detectives, so
yeah.
I am here for it if anyone wants to reach out.
Yeah.
But
and beyond Gacy, because we do cover other topics as far as true crime cases go, we ended up with a massive collection from the two lead investigators on the Ed Gein case.
True.
So we do have their collections in full displayed in our Savannah Museum as well.
And we're opening a Gein exhibit here in the fall. That's going to be insane. It's a lot of Ed Gein stuff that no one knows exists. So.
We only have just a few seconds. Did you like the?
No.
No, it wasn't good, was it?
No.
I couldn't watch it, honestly.
Well, it was fantasy.
It's Ed Gein yeah. fan fiction, which is...
Yeah.
Yeah, when you make Ed Gein sexy, you know you've done wrong.
Yeah, he was kind of cute in that, too.
Cute and sexy are two different things.
I hate to say that. I really hate to say that. Ryan and Chloe Mannon, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
I want to give your book a plug, Question of Doubt. I think it would be really interesting to read this and see what you think about it. You can get it on... Could you tell us where to get it?
Yeah, it's just gravefacemuseum.com. And we also have copies available in all of our physical locations, so at the museum here in town, too.
And the Gray Face Museum is on Milwaukee and Bucktown. You can look at it.
1829 North Milwaukee.
Thanks for coming on. We'll take care.
Yes, thank you.